Thank you.
All right. Are you intrigued? Yes. A great unseen film from 2016. The film is called Silence, and it is the final third part of our series here this week on finding God in pop culture. And we have been honored to have the producer of Hacksaw Ridge, Terry Benedict. We've been honored to have the producer of The Shack, Brad Cummings, and today we have two more Pepperdine graduates who have produced this film. No Christian university has ever had more cultural impact in 1 year than Pepperdine University. That's true. It's 100% true. Golden Globes, Oscar nominations, Oscar wins. Powerful, powerful testimony about the enduring grace of God through media. This film was directed by Martin Scorsese, who said, "My whole life has been movies and religion. That's it. Nothing else." And that may surprise you. You're like, wait, the guy who directed Taxi Driver and who made Goodfellas and The Departed and Wolf of Wall Street. What do these possibly have to do with religion? These films are cautionary tales about people you should not look up to or emulate. In the same way, how many stories in the Bible are about how we should not behave? How many examples do we have of who we shouldn't be like? These are tales of death and the wages of sin. And he takes it very seriously. Why do I care so much about this subject? Because when I was a senior in high school, someone who loved playing football, loved hurting my opponents, right? Enjoyed it. I saw this film about a violent, angry, self-destructive middleweight champion. It's based on a real-life story, boxer Jake LaMotta. And the film is about both his triumph and his fall. How he kind of systematically ruins his relationships with everybody who cares about him. His brother, who's his manager, he abuses his wife. And at the end of the film, he's lost his title, he's lost his house, he's lost his marriage, and he ends up in jail, literally beating his head against the wall, saying, why? I saw that as a senior in high school, and I said, I think that's the road I'm headed down. Scared me to death. It was strong R-rated medicine for a person who was living a strong R-rated life. And at the end of the film, the scene fades to black, and it says, all I know is this, once I was blind, but now I can see. I was like, what does that mean? Where's that from? I saw a 2-hour film about blindness that then invited me to see. Shortly thereafter, I went to a Young Life club for the first time. I heard the words personal relationship and Jesus Christ in a sentence for the first time. And I began the spiritual journey that led me here as a professor of communication, training the next generation of filmmakers to figure out how to potentially, right, bring the sacred through the profane. And so that's what we're doing here. I wrote a book about this, Matrix of Meanings, Finding God in Pop Culture, and it really begins with this question. Has God ever spoken to you through a movie, a TV show, a song? Right? It's not about special revelation of Scripture. It's about the general revelation of God speaking through unlikely means, right? Through a donkey, right? Through Babylonian kings, through people that seemingly have nothing to do with God, right? And yet God can use the profane to bring us towards the sacred. I've continued as a professor, and I'm now looking at the small screen of, the cell phone in our pocket where most of us are getting our information and even our entertainment. And then this is my new book that's coming out next spring. We're looking at selfies and saying, could God possibly be involved in that process? Is there a spiritual search going on every time we're sort of looking for our self-worth through this phone? You may find God in TV shows like The Good Wife. Had an interesting subplot about, a daughter who was a person of faith and a husband who came to faith and reconciliation. You may be interested in a show like The Americans, right? It's about spies, Russian spies in America. And they're like here to subvert our democracy. And what happens? Their daughter comes to Christ through a local church. Now they're like, we've got a real problem on our hands. And so here we come today to our final third film, Silence. Directed by Martin Scorsese. And I have two distinguished guests Dale Brown, you may know, beloved member of the Church of Christ, accounting major here at Pepperdine University. And what has he been doing? He's been taking account of real estate and oil and has refashioned a life in Midland, Texas that is almost incomparable in scope and success. And yet, at this, I don't know, third stage of life, suddenly he finds himself on a film set. And he's now a producer making films like Last Days in the Desert, starring Ewan McGregor, who plays both the Jesus and the devil in the same film. How does a Church of Christ oil man from Texas find himself doing something like that? Or even more, investing in the project that Martin Scorsese has been waiting to make for 20 years. And who's his partner on it? An MBA student here at Pepperdine, Tyler Zachariah. While a student producing major films. I don't understand this. We've got so much to talk about. Please give a big hand to Dale Brown and Taylor Zachariah. Come on up, gentlemen. I'm a little bit mesmerized by the fact that somehow oil and real estate in Texas would lead to making a Japanese novel into a major motion picture. How does something like that happen?
You're not any more surprised than I am. I've told people that my involvement is either providential or absolutely stupid. I think it's yet to be determined which.
Tyler, you're a student, and yet you end up getting involved on this major picture. How does something like that happen?
Yeah, I had known Dale. I was living in Beijing, China, running a private equity fund in emerging markets, and knew him through that, and he had wondered if I'd come to L.A. and look at films that he was interested in investing in, and decided to do that. And originally, we were scheduled to be involved in Silence in a much less hands-on capacity. And right around the time that, so it's really looking at kind of halftime work, halftime school, and right around the time that my first son was born and I just started school is when we really actually took over and produced Silence. And so that was a Silence trial for myself in and of itself, which was fun to do this movie and experience a lot of the hardships that's involved with it as well. So
wow. Dale, there had to be maybe a couple of steps between, like, I'm living in Texas, and I'm enjoying my grandkids, and I'm serving on the board at Abilene Christian and Pepperdine, and suddenly, I think I'm going to get into movies with Martin Scorsese.
Well, I grew up, my world was the church. That's where my life had been. My dad was a preacher. That's where all my energy was put in terms of living out my Christian faith, had been involved in business, and wanting to be a good example, at least, in my business life. And somebody, about 1990, I think it was, got us to go to an event at Focus on the Family that encouraged people to get involved in the public square, trying to engage public policy that would be friendly to families and faith specifically. So we did some of that, went home, and ended up running for city council. And that was, again, one of those either stupidity or providence decisions. And it was really through those relationships that, at a meeting in Washington, D.C., one of the folks engaged in public policy development said, really, he brought in some folks that were media involved, saying that really culture is upstream of politics, that politics is a representation of culture as opposed to the shaper of culture. And so encouraged some Christian people to get involved in trying to impact culture upstream of either politics or even what we would do from a pulpit, which reaches a typically already convinced segment of the population. So that was where the seed was planted, and met a fellow named Mark Rogers, one of the presenters there, with an organization called Wedgwood Circle that you know very well.
I
one
sure
of the
do.
Founders of Wedgwood Circle.
Yep. Great community.
You can tell more about what that is, but it's a group devoted to trying to equip and connect Christian folks with some level of resources to engage culture through media. So that's where it came about.
Yeah.
And Mark, one of the very first projects he mentioned was this. He had the script for Silence, presented it, and the script itself looked to be like the kind of project that would hopefully, the idea was to catalyze a conversation in the culture about faith as opposed to being an openly advocating faith in the culture in ways that sometimes would be difficult to get past people's levels of resistance to a, quote, religious message. That was the idea. And this product looked to me like it was designed that way, and or but it could have that impact. And only thing I knew about Martin Scorsese, who already was the owner of the project, was that he had made the movie The Last Temptation of Christ in the late 80s that I had not seen, but it had clearly branded him a heretic in my world. And so that's kind of where I saw him.
Yeah. I think many people did not see that film because it had been branded in a particular way. Yeah.
So my first question kind of was, why would Martin Scorsese want to make a film that I would care anything about, that I would be interested in being a part of? And the fellow who was raising the money for it said, well, I don't know, but you can ask him.
Huh.
So he set up a meeting for us to go and meet and talk to him. And he said some things that I actually did look at the movie Last Temptation of Christ, and he absolutely was wrong in the way he approached that story. He had it wrong in all kinds of ways. But didn't directly challenge him about that, but I remember that was
20, 30 years ago.
He said he was a little further down the road than he was when he made that movie. But he said he thought it was the essence of Christian, presents the essence of Christian faith. He grew up in the ghettos of, Italian ghetto of New York City, and had Catholic influence, specifically a priest that took interest in his young group of 12 to 15-year-olds, and he says he still has a relationship with that priest, mm-hmm. and had a lot of influence on him.
Beautiful.
And he, as most Catholic young men do, he actually went on the beginnings of his path to the priesthood as a 15-year-old. So faith has been of interest to him, at least, from an early age. So that's how I got started.
I love it. What I love about Wedgwood Circle is that I think they've kind of recovered some of the beauty of the Renaissance era, right? I mean, some of the best art in the history of the world was really came about through church patronage, right? It came about from people of faith saying, make me something beautiful that reflects the glory of God. And the church kind of rallied, and people of faith kind of rallied. And I think they've recovered that idea of how to maybe bless culture as opposed to curse culture or condemn culture. And so I'm glad you caught that vision. Tyler, did you have this background? Like, you always wanted to be in film? You always wanted to make movies? Where did this start for you?
I didn't, but I was always a big fan of film, and I'd tool around on IMDb and stuff just for fun and as a younger man. And I think the opportunity when Dale was talking to me about it, what was compelling to me was the idea of I think that there is a place for faith-based movies. And personally, from a consumer perspective, I haven't been that impressed with faith-based movies. I think that for certain audiences, it's great. I have nothing against people making them. But I don't think that your traditional faith-based movie, as you'd look at, speaks to the mass audience that needs to hear truth the most. And I think that when people sit down to see a movie, if they feel for a second like they're being preached to, their walls go up and they don't hear anything else. So, and I look to Jesus is the ultimate storyteller, and oftentimes the most compelling stories that he portrayed in his sermons were parables, and were compelling stories that got people to think and to converse about the kingdom of God. And so what Dale was trying to do in looking at the really telling good stories first and foremost that could not necessarily give answers, but make people ask questions. And I think that we serve a God that is big enough to answer questions when people ask. But lots of times people don't know to be asking questions and are looking so far down that they haven't had a chance to look up or look around or anywhere else. So that's what was compelling to me about looking at producing, investing in films like this and other ones that we've done. So,
Well, I actually lived in Japan after I graduated from college, taught English in Japan. And so as a missionary serving over there, we read the book Silence, which is really about the kind of the missionary history of Japan, a very painful history that maybe not a lot of people were aware of. At what point did you read the novel early on, or you just kind of stuck to the script, or how did that go?
I actually read the script first, at least. Yeah. I read portions of the novel, but primarily exposed to it through the script.
Yeah. And a lot of people don't realize that, you know, Japan, there was a very strong Christian movement there, you know, hundreds of years ago. And why is that not the case today, right? So the film really begins with Liam Neeson and this notion of this early, is it Jesuit movement?
Right.
The Jesuit movement. Did you go to the set? Did you sort of see kind of the telling
the film
parts
was
of it?
Was done in Taiwan, and a lot of involvement of Japanese people, and but it was filmed in Taiwan. And yes, we went to the set twice. Tyler was there at least once, weren't you?
Yeah, this is actually an amazing set to see because these are natural hot springs in the mountains, and it was raining that day, so all of this smoke and steam and everything that you see. It's all 100% natural that we would have had to pay a lot of money for in post if it wasn't. So it was miserable being up there, but it made for some great footage.
It felt palpably almost like a hellish type of scenario, just the way you just had this steam rising. I did not realize that was natural. That's amazing to me. That's amazing. Well, it really follows these two priests who are searching for Liam Neeson. It's kind of a mystery story. And is this based on some historical, you know, background and that type
the
of
author of the book, Endo, Shishako Endo, was a very well-known Japanese author, as I understand it, with a Christian upbringing in Japan, rather unusual. And so this was kind of his seminal work, as I understand it, and in the 60s, early 60s, was very popular in Japan. And as you mentioned, early in this history, my understanding is approximately 10% of the population of Japan, perhaps a little more than that, had accepted Christianity through the what we would call Catholic missionaries. At that time, there was only one Christian church in the world in the 1600s. And it virtually was wiped out during this era, mainly as a political reaction when the shoguns saw what was happening wherever the Christian religion was being exported, colonization was going on. And so they were resisting colonization, not Christianity per se, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. That's my understanding of how the dynamics of what was going on that are depicted in the movie. Now the testing of their faith was very real. It's clearly a well documented part of history that's not based on I believe the character of Fajeda, the older priest, is based on a real person, or at least historically documented person from that era.
Mm-hmm.
The rest is fiction,
yeah,
but based on historical fact.
So
Daryl Tipping could tell us for sure, right? Did I get that right?
So what's really poignant and beautiful about this film, and we saw a little bit in the clip that we saw, is this faith that this remnant, right, this persecuted remnant of Japanese Christians, right, they've had to go underground, they've had to hide their faith, and yet they continue to sort of cling to hope and hope to you know, be served by a priest and to join together as a faith community. Did you go to the village, some of these seaside scenes or whatever that they
I did not. I only was in on the set in Taiwan Taipei.
Yeah. Well, as you saw in the film, the priests essentially, you know, have a chance to sort of discover that this remnant has not abandoned their faith despite really very profound persecution led by the shogunate that you were talking about. And they just become tested in very tangible ways. And I think all of us are familiar with sort of the persecution of Christians that's been going on around the world in a lot of different countries, but we may not know about this historical period. Did you have this sense that, yeah, you were telling a story that was sort of ancient and yet contemporary in other ways?
Well, I do remember thinking from the very beginning that that the story could resonate with folks who are aware of persecution, religious persecution in the world. It's headline front page news everywhere we turn. So I thought it would at least to some degree resonate with a theme that's pretty current, mm-hmm. and not just be seen as a historical event.
Mm-hmm. So it's maybe a little confusing to sort of American audiences, but what is it that they're asking? They have these, I think they're called fumie, and they're asking the Japanese Christians, in a sense, to renounce their faith by stepping on these images of Christ, to sort of desecrate a holy image. And are there fumie? Is this, something that actually happened?
Yeah, they're actually, and I think they still have a number of them on display in Japan. And they were actual artifacts used. And the reason that they were using them at the time was they had spent a lot of time simply slaughtering and killing Christians. And the phrase, the blood of martyrs is the seed of the church, I think they found that to be true. And it actually empowered a lot of both the priests and the local people there. And they found that actually the best way of eradicating it was public professions of denials of Christ. And that having that happen consistently, constantly, was more effective than just killing them. So that's ultimately what it boiled down to.
There's at least one museum in Japan today, I think in Nagasaki, that is devoted to this period of their history, and a lot of these artifacts are on display there. And so it's a real thing.
Mm. Well, there are scenes of martyrdom that are they're harrowing. They're hard to watch. To see these Japanese Christians suffer under the hands of their leaders and yet not renounce their faith. I found myself just very inspired by, the depth of their rigor and their willingness to cling to Jesus even unto death. It's very, very humbling to me as a person of faith watching the film. Did the story inspire you in some of those ways?
It is a story, as I see it, of faith under pressure. Different people react different ways. But for faith to be tested is not at all uncommon. It happens in all of us, I believe, for it to be real. We even talk about our kids need to have their faith tested for it to become real to them. Until it really is faith, and it's hard to make it useful. So the peasants whose faith, even in the clip you showed, is it's simplistic in our way of thinking. You know, they aren't doctrinally very sophisticated, but faith was very real to them. They somehow got it that Jesus made a difference, and so their loyalty to Jesus was somehow something they were unwilling to give up. And how they come to that level of faith, frankly, it's still a mystery to me. Now, the priests were different. They had a trained view of Christian faith. And interesting, the three priests, in my view, responded differently.
Yes.
To the pressure.
Yes.
Of being called to renounce their faith publicly.
Yeah.
And so those three different responses, it's kind of which one's right? It would be how would you respond if you were in that situation? Most of us would tend to be more sophisticated in terms of our understanding of what Christianity is about. So the peasants can appear to be ignorant in many ways, but yet that simple faith, many of us have had opportunity to see in folks who are first-generation Christians who typically in a poverty situation, faith is very real. And
I was just saying, I think the powerful part of the story is that faith's response to suffering is shown in many different ways. So you can see I think everyone can see themselves responding to suffering in each of the characters in different ways. Now, you may latch on to one more than the other, but I think that was the beauty of looking and saying, okay, let's explore what the human condition in response to suffering is.
Well, for those who want to go further, there's actually some really great resources. There's books about the hidden Christians of Japan, so there's historical responses. This Makoto Fujimura is a professor at Fuller Seminary, and he's written as a Japanese Christian about, you know, how to kind of wrestle with the questions and find beauty amidst this suffering. So there's been some lovely, deeply heartfelt responses. The film gets messy in terms of people's response, right? You have kind of a bit of a Judas character in one of the Japanese characters who may not be reliable. People are incarcerated. They're imprisoned. They're tortured. In a sense, the priests are, they're challenged to see Jesus' suffering and their own suffering. And yet they're also tempted to renounce their faith for the sake of those who are suffering. Do you think that it was too complex for audiences? Was it too messy? Do we like our Christianity a little more cut and dried? Why is this a little too much, maybe, for audiences to kind of enter into?
Well, it is a deep subject, and silence. I don't think Endo liked the word silence as the title for his book. In English, because the implication of God being silent would be a first thought. God was, in fact, the main character believes God to have been silent, and God in suffering, not silent. Seeing God in the silence, as opposed to God being uninterested and uninvolved. It is a challenging concept, and that concept is a barrier to faith for very sophisticated church people, just as it is with people who have rejected faith because of their not understanding how a good God could let bad things happen to people they love. So that barrier to faith is not just in the world, it's in the church as well. And so to me, that's a universal struggle for all of us to say, where is God when he doesn't behave the way I think he ought to? When he doesn't live up to my expectations, is God wrong or am I wrong? What have I done to deserve this punishment? Or why isn't God stepping in and fixing this injustice, which is so clearly wrong? So that's the challenge that I was hoping that people would be asking those kinds of questions out loud. We all have them. I think we all have them. We all have that struggle. But catalyzing a discussion about that in the culture could allow the church to give a biblical response to those issues.
Hmm. Well said. Well said. Scorsese, this was a kind of a life project for him. people may yet not have realized, not only had he done The Last Temptation of Christ, he also did the story of the Dalai Lama in Kundun. So he's deeply interested in spiritual things. It seemed like he went both deep in his faith and as well as his caste, right? So Andrew Garfield actually, I think, got involved with like the Ignatian spirituality and exercises. That's pretty
wild. He and Adam Driver, who played his co-priest in that, they spent 35 days in silence in Portugal with doing the walk of the exercises of St. Ignatius that all priests, the Jesuit priests, do in order to prepare themselves for the priesthood. Got a lot out of that. And it was actually from... He had to run off from our set to go and shoot Hacksaw Ridge, and he had said that if it wasn't for that training just in the idea of Christianity in general, he could have never made the performance in Hacksaw Ridge that he did as well. So it's interesting.
Yeah, my understanding is that Garfield grew up in a culturally Jewish home, not Jewish faith, but Jewish by culture. So he did not have a Christian faith, and... He made a statement at one point, as I understand it, on a national late night show, that in the process of making the movie, he came to fall in love with Jesus.
Powerful.
Pretty powerful.
It's powerful. You had this amazing experience where you actually previewed the film in the Vatican. You were over there with quite a few Jesuit priests. Yeah. What is that like? Here you are, Church of Christ, Midland, Texas, and now you're bringing your film to the Vatican. Help me understand this. This is so wild.
Well, I need to add in here that my business partner in the film was a fellow from Mexico, Gaston Pavlovich, and it was really his influence that got us into the Vatican, not his connections. And so I just got to tag along. But it was interesting.
How was the film received?
The current Pope is a Jesuit. This story is very intriguing to him. So it was his interest, not somebody trying to promote the film by taking it and getting him to be interested. He
had wanted to be a missionary in Japan initially as a young priest.
Really? Wow.
So his interest in the story was already there, and he had made statements about it. There is a holiday in the Catholic calendar that celebrates this history, not just in Japan, but in China, in Asia generally, the persecution of Christian missionaries in that part of the world is still a part of the Catholic calendar. And so it was not, you know, cooperating with an effort to promote the film that caused it to be exposed in the Vatican.
Hmm. But were you in the room when, like, these 500 Jesuits saw this picture?
I did get to be in the room when there was a group of, for some, I don't know the occasion, but there were, I think there were 200.
Fair enough.
I've heard 300.
A global gathering.
I've heard 300.
A global gathering.
It was a global gathering of Jesuits that takes place, I think, only about every 50 years. I don't know what the occasion was. Somebody could tell me what it is. But so there was a screening. In their seminary in Rome, and I got to be there and sat on the back row, and there was an hour of Q&A following the screening of the film with Scorsese, and this Father Martin, who is he mm-hmm. edits some journal for Jesuits in the U.S.
Father James Martin, right.
James Martin,
yeah.
And he's the one who had put it together. He's the one who led Garfield and Driver through the experience of the Jesuit lifestyle. So he moderated a Q&A with Scorsese for an hour following the screening of the film. It was fascinating to me. The Jesuits seemed to really appreciate the film. They knew this part of their history very well. Kind of fascinating. I was sitting right next to a priest who I believe was Italian by descent, but currently serving as a missionary in Japan.
Wow.
So his reaction, I thought, was, when I want to see what he did.
Wow.
And he loved it. He
wow.
really enjoyed it and thought it a helpful thing to tell that story.
Beautiful. I want to open it up for questions. If you want to see more even of Scorsese talking about the film, he actually did an interview at Fuller Seminary right around the time that the film came out. And you can find that online. It's about a 25-minute conversation.
That's fantastic.
It's really great. It's really great. Yes,
very
sir.
Good.
So I mentioned at the beginning that the film, despite some really strong critical reviews, the audience really did not show up in what one would call significant numbers. So you're kind of wondering what is the story.
Pitiful performance at the box office is what he's saying. it was amazing that not only did it not get Academy Award nominations like it was reported to be likely to happen, the box office didn't show up. One of the reasons I think is it's 2 hours and 40 minutes long. It is painful to watch, not entertaining. It's not a film to be enjoyed. It's a film to be appreciated or take a while to digest it, so it's hard to watch. So you're not, you can ask Jeff Walling. He told me, I think it was Jeff that told me, that he took his wife to see this movie on Valentine's Day. I said, Jeff, and he knew it was a mistake. Not long after before they left the theater, he knew it was a mistake. So it's not a date night movie, I guess is what I'm saying. So that's part of it, I think. I'm going to blame Paramount as the distributors a lot for not having allowed us to prepare the Christian community to receive the film. I think there are many who would have responded just like I would have. Scorsese film, I'm not interested. The day we went to visit him in his home in Manhattan, the boxes were still in his living room for Wolf of Wall Street. He had just delivered it I think it was a Christmas release that film came out. So I wouldn't have looked at anything Scorsese was doing and without some preparation to understand it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, sir.
Dale, I've always been curious. You walked into a script that had been prepared quite a bit in advance of your time. Were there any parts of it that you were so in objection with that you had some influence in modifying a little bit, or did you kind of have to pretty much go along with what Scorsese already had laid out?
So the question is, how much of the script was fixed? Did you have a chance to input the story? Were there questions you had or things you'd like to have seen changed?
There was actually one section in the film that some people that had brought me the script wanted to see changed. Got Philip Yancey to read the script and write a report, write a statement about why that needed to be changed. And it was based on the fact that, and I think Endo's widow is the one who had made the issue, that the translation into English is not accurate. And it comes to a critical point in the movie where the voice of God is a voiceover speaking to why he was silent and what this priest comes to the challenge of, is he going to do this public denial of his faith? And in the English version, the voice of God comes out in the form of a command saying, step on it. Go ahead and do it. Endo's widow says, no, that's not entirely. It's a permissive statement as opposed to a command. Instead of saying, it's okay, I got you covered, in essence, it's do it. It serves my purpose. So that was the one phrase that we tried to get changed. It did not get changed.
Well, the way that the voiceover was crafted definitely went to address that. So,
I think there was even a point at which, went back up to say, Scorsese has an obsession with doubt. Judas is a hero to him. And he thinks Judas is much maligned. In the story, The Last Temptation of Christ, Judas is a hero. That's, to me, that's the real heresy in the film. And so he, I think, originally intended for the voice of Kitajiro to be that voice saying, go ahead. Because he thought Kitajiro was more the Jesus figure than Rodriguez, for sure.
Interesting.
Those are... We really didn't make much, but it was pretty fixed when we got involved.
This moment where the voice of God audibly appears on screen, right? Well, you don't see a lot of that in film. And yet there it came. And I was at a screening of critics, within film critics, and there were people who literally laughed and said, ha, 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 right? They literally scoffed at the voice of God appearing in a film. And I think that may have affected those Oscar nominations, because it takes religion so seriously and treats God with such reverence that God actually shows up, and it's not questioned as to whether that is God. It just shows up. One critic from the Los Angeles Times, Justin Chang, who is the lead critic for the Los Angeles Times, called this an anguished masterwork of spiritual inquiry. He named it his best film of the year. He is a person of faith as well. The leading film critic at the LA Times is a deeply committed Christian, folks. Deeply committed Christian.
And I'll say because it is a controversial topic, and it's very, I think people walk out more wrecked in their head than in their heart, because it is a brain wrestler rather than a heart wrestler. And so you look at the juxtaposition of a Hacksaw Ridge, which is all heart, and a Silence, which is all brain. I was concerned about people's desire to have their brain engaged too much in film, because lots of times, and I'm the first one to say it, you just want to check out and be entertained. And I was worried that a lot of the nuances involved in the story would be missed by audiences. And thankfully, I was really pleasantly surprised overall, both critical response and among Christian audiences, among peers, friends, was just a powerful response to the story. So I was really pleased by that. I think when we talk about the audience response, it's the length, the time of the year, and just it's a difficult thing to say, I want to go and sit down for 2 hours and 40 minutes and have my head turned on, be challenged by something that I wouldn't say it's too graphic. Some people were afraid that it was going to be really graphic based off of the reviews, but it's intense, very intense. And that's tough to have an audience come to.
So we're almost out of time here. Maybe one question, then, gentlemen, if you will just bring your questions out.
I want to say about that one of the most important responses to me was from a critic who said he's an atheist, the son of atheists. Watching the film devastated him. It challenged his atheism, is the way I interpreted the statement. And another critic wrote an atheist view to the, guide to watching the movie, which I thought. Mm-hmm. So it did, to that degree, challenge a lack of faith. Challenged that.
Last question, yeah.
I just want to say thank you for making this movie. I saw it twice, read the novel in between seeing it, and had tears in my eyes as the voice of Christ spoke. I think it is a movie that should be a classic, and so I want to say thank you.
Thank you very much. The book itself has been used in theological training for a number of years, and hope is that the film will have a shelf life that will make it useful as well. Thank you.
And I'll say one last point, just because you had Brad here the other night. Brad is I don't know him too well. Who made The Shack?
Mm-hmm.
And if you've seen The Shack and you've seen Silence, they are polar opposites of how to approach suffering or how to think about suffering. And it's not. I don't think either of them are wrong. I think it's just a different way of looking at it. And Brad is a dear friend of my sister. He actually presided over her wedding, and she was with him right when Silence was coming out. She was talking that her brother was involved with Silence, and he went and saw it and wrote her an email about his reaction to Silence, and she was starting to read it to me. We were together. This was around Christmas, and she's just, I don't know if you want to hear this, and she's reading it, and he was not a fan of the movie from the way that things were going, but He kept on reading it. The email was 9 pages long of well thought out stuff, and I was ecstatic. I said, look, if I don't care if you like it or you don't, if a movie can elicit a 9-page email, that to me is success, because it's driving a conversation, and I think the conversation is the important part. So.
And I did see Brad yesterday, and I knew you told me about that email. I told him about that, having known about it. He says, well, after he talked to Tyler, he understood better, and he thought it was better than he realized after he had a chance to think through it.
So I'll conclude our 3 days here by saying, in a sense, you couldn't have three more different films. You had a war film. You had Shaq being kind of a family romance. This is a kind of a global film, interior. There are classic films being made about the depth of the Christian faith, and the church ignores them every single year. These films, they win Oscars, they go to film festivals, people cry and weep who have never set foot in a church. And people of faith say, it's too challenging, I can't look at it, I don't want to deal with it. This is why they don't enter our churches. Because they're asking questions at a deeper level than we seem to be willing to engage. And so they're finding God in the films because the stones will not cry out. This film right here is a cinematic cathedral. It's designed to last 1,000 years. And the person who invested lost $35 million. But you know what? It's going to last forever, just like those cathedrals of Europe. This gentleman, I don't know how much he lost, but he has made something. He has made something that will endure for hundreds of years because of its beauty, truth, power. It will endure. And you, sir, have stepped into that role as patron of the arts that we saw in the Renaissance. You are leading a new Renaissance. And I deeply appreciate Dale Brown, Tyler Zachariah.
Look, something I should have said earlier, the place the movie has been received best in the world is Japan. And there's some indication that it's sparking some interest in Christian thought that is new for Japan.
That is a profound gift to the kingdom of God. And we are grateful for this Church of Christ leader. Bravo. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for all 3 days.